I think that you went in and saw the man first,
yes.
Did you not?
Yes, that's coming later. The following morning, he used to shut at dawn. I lay awake thinking of it all night, and I thought, well, I'll try to help this fellow a bit. So I took down a cup full of brandy and presented it to him, and I said, drink this and you won't know very much about it. He said, what is it? I said, it's brandy. He said, well, I've never drunk spirits in my life. There's no point in me starting now. That, to me, was a sort of spurious sort of courage, in a way. Two men came and led him out of the hut where he'd been on guarded all night. As he left the hut, his legs gave way. Then one could see the fear entering his heart. Rather than march to the firing spot, he was dragged along. When we got there, he had his hands tied behind his back. He was put up against a wall. His eyes were bandaged. And the firing squad were given the order to fire. And the firing squad consisted of eight men, only two of which had their rifles loaded. The other two carried blank ammunition. That was so that they wouldn't actually know who had fired the fatal shot. I wondered at the time, what on earth will happen if they miss him, they don't kill him completely. And I was very anxious about that. But when they fired, he fell to the ground, writhing, as all people do, even if they've been killed. They have this reflex action of writhing about, which goes on for some minutes. I didn't know whether he'd been dead or not. But at that moment, the sergeant in charge stepped forward, put a revolver to his head, and blew his brains out. And that was the coup de grace, which I understood afterwards, I learnt afterwards, always carried out in these cases. Mm-hmm.